Let yourself relax. Body get into a comfortable position. Take some deep breaths. And as you let your body and mind relax, just simply notice that you are a conscious being, that you are self-aware. By that I mean, as you relax, you can notice whatever sounds you're hearing in the environment. You're aware of the sensations of your body. You're aware of your in and out going breath. You're aware of any thoughts that may be passing through your mind. Any emotions, any feelings, any fantasies or daydreams. And you're also aware that you're aware of these things. You're aware that you are an awareful being. You're aware that all of these things are known to you. All of these experiences are known. And if you just sit with your experience, maybe you can recognize that the awareful being that you are is not an object of someone's awareness. But is aware of itself, not in a subject-object relationship, but simply because you are awareness. Awareness is its own experience. Awareness stops at awareness. If you objectify awareness, there's no one behind it objectifying it. Awareness is its own experience. All the objects, all of the perceptions of my awareness come and go. The sounds that I'm hearing, the sensations in the physical body, the changing breath, the thought flow, all of these experiences are illumined. They're not away from awareness, but they come and go in awareness. They come and go in me. They're not away from me, but they come and go in me. Awareness doesn't come and go. The self-evident, self-effulgent awareness, which is my being, doesn't come and go. is changeless and constant, the constant presence amidst all of the changing phenomena, the changing perceptions. Changing thoughts, all the different perceptions, feelings. Don't cover me, they're illumined by me. They don't cover me. I remain the constant, present to all of them. Just like the sun is not covered by the clouds. The clouds are illumined by the sun. I'm not covered by my thoughts. I illumine my thoughts. I'm not covered by my feelings. Like the sun, I illumine my feelings and my perceptions. I am the one who is changeless. The awareful being that illumines everything else. I am changeless. Unattached, I remain the same as all of the thoughts and feelings and perceptions come and go. Om. Sahana bhavatu, sahana punaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavati tamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Manas chakshura dervayukta swayam yaha. Manas chakshura dervayukta swayam yaha. Manas chakshura dera manas chakshura dihi. Manas chakshura dera manas chakshura dihi. Manas chakshura dera agamya swarupaha. Manas chakshura dera agamya swarupaha. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma. Sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma. Sandhi. Manas. It's actually manas, is ending substantive, manas. Chakshus, another is ending. Manas, chakshus, adehe, vyuktaha, swayam, yaha. Manas, chakshus, adehe, manas, chakshus, adihi. Manas, chakshus adehe agamya swarupaha. Agamya swarupaha. Sa nitya upalabdhi swarupaha aham atma. Aham atma. Aham atma. I aham. Aham atma. I am the self. Aham atma saha. I am that self. Saha. Aham atma saha. I am that self. Nitya upalabdhi swarupaha. I am that self which is nitya upalabdhi swarupaha. The one, it's a bahuvrihi compound, the one whose nature, whose swarupa, whose nature is consciousness, upalabdhi, which is nitya, which is free from time. So I am that self whose nature is nitya upalabdhi, consciousness which is free from time, changeless. That's always the last line. It's always the how he ends the verse. So when he says that, I am that consciousness, I am that self which is pure consciousness, then you go up to the next top line. Yaha, that self which is pure consciousness, who is manas chakshura dehe, Vyuktaha swayam. Yaha, who is swayam itself, vyuktaha, free from, not associated with, free from, the mind, the manas, the chakshu, the eyes, etc. Mind stands for the whole antakarana. The whole mind means all of the different types of thoughts, feelings, moods, everything that can belong to the mind. Chakshu stands for the organs, the sense organs. Right, if you say chakshu adi, adi means beginning with the chakshu, so beginning with the eyes, so it'd be eyes, ears, nose, etc., all the five sense organs. And that adi allows you to take everything else, like, for instance, the karmendriyas, all of the organs of action. Karmendriyas means organs of action, like your hands and your feet, your ability to speak, your sexuality, your ability to evacuate. Those are the five karmendriyas. It also includes the body. So when you say, manas chakshura dehe vyuktaha swayam yaha, I am that one who myself am totally free from the mind and the sense organs and the body. Vyuktaha. Asanga. The word asanga, in the meditation we can say, I am unattached. The meditation that we usually do and use a Sanskrit phrase is asangoham. Asangaha aham. Asangoham. Right? Asangaha, aham, asangoham. Aham, I am asangaha. Sangaha means attached to something. Asangaha means unattached. Same as viyukta. I am unattached. I am a sangha. I am not attached to the body, the mind, the sense organs. I'm different, right? I'm a sangha, so a sanghaham. So it says, the one who itself, myself, is not attached, viyuktaha, separate from the body, the mind, the sense organs, and yet, manas chakshura dehe, manas chakshura dehi, and yet, I am the one, I am that atma, who is the mind of the mind, and the eye of the eye. So I am the conscious being, right, in the mind. I am the conscious being in the sense organs. I am the mind of the mind, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear. And I'll get into that in a minute. But manas chakshura dehe, that's a genitive. Adehe is genitive singular. So of the mind, the eyes, etc. Manas chakshura dehi, like harihi, nominative singular. I am the mind, eyes, etc. Of the mind, eyes, etc. Do you see what that says? So, manas chakshura dehe, manas chakshura dehi. Then, manas chakshura dehe agamya swarupaha. But my swarupa, my nature, is agamyaha. My nature, who I am, my swarupa, it's agamyaha. It's agamya. It can't be reached by the mind and the sense organs. I am the eye of the eye and the mind of the mind, but my being, the one who is the eye of the eye and the mind of the mind, that one can't be reached by the mind or by the eye. In other words, I can't become an object for them. I am the eye of the eye. I can't become an object for the perception of the eye. I am the mind of the mind. I can't become an object of perception, an object of cognition for the mind. Okay? So let's look at this again. Manas chakshura dehe viyuktaha swayam yaha. I am the one who, myself, swayam, by my nature, myself, am separate from the mind and the sense organs. I am the eye of the eye and the mind of the mind, whose nature cannot be perceived. Agamya literally means reached. It cannot be known, reached or known. Okay? Cannot be reached by the mind or the eyes. It's a beautiful verse. It's really comes from the spirit of the verse comes from the Kena Upanishad, where this eye of the eye and mind of the mind is used in this particular Upanishad. Okay? One of the beautiful things about this is it shows the non-distance, the asangaha, the asangoham. I am not attached, but I'm also not away from. Right? There's no distance between the consciousness that I am and the consciousness which the mind enjoys. No distance between the consciousness that I am, the consciousness that the eyes enjoy. So we even think of the eyes enjoying consciousness or the sense organs enjoying consciousness. I don't know if we normally talk like that. We don't go around saying my eyes enjoy consciousness or my mind enjoys consciousness. We don't talk like that. We just take it completely for granted. Right? So what we mean by that, to kind of now focus in on exactly what do we mean by consciousness, right? Let's just look at it in terms of the sense organs. My eyes, to me, I can say, I can use the language, I see these forms. Right? If I say, I see these forms, just listen to the language now, I see these forms, obviously I see the forms through my eyes. So my eyes now are the means of knowledge for me seeing these forms. So I can say, I see these forms, I am conscious of these forms, I am aware of these forms are known to me. Right? All of these words, I am conscious of these forms, I'm aware of these forms are known to me. Right? And then I can go on. I can say, all of these forms are in my awareness. None of these forms are away from my awareness. I am conscious of all of these forms. All of these forms are known. Right? And so that means that through the use of the eyes, right, these forms are known to me, are in my consciousness. Right? And so therefore my eyes become, in a sense, a carrier of consciousness. Right? The rug's not a carrier of consciousness. The table's not a carrier of consciousness. But the eyes are a carrier of consciousness. The ears are a carrier of consciousness. My sense of touch is a carrier of consciousness. Because of these sense organs, these objects of consciousness are known. Right? And so therefore, the sense organs themselves are not away from consciousness. And so we say, the eyes are that which allow me to know color. We can say form also, but color is more specific, right? Because I can tell form from touch and whatnot. And so, because of the sense organs' eyes, color is in my consciousness. Because of the sense organs' ears, right? Sound is in my consciousness, and so forth. Sense organ touch, touch is in my consciousness. Because of the mind, the sense organ, the inner instrument, we don't call it a sense organ, we call it an antakarana, which means inner instrument. Because of this inner instrument, thoughts are in my consciousness, right? Perception, intellections are in my consciousness, thought flow, fantasy, memory, all of these things, the ahankara, the I notion, the buddhi, the intellect, the manas, the fluctuating thoughts, the citta, the memory, and then my moods and emotions, all of these things are in my consciousness. Okay? And so the body, mind, sense organs, and of course the sense of touch pervades the physical body. And so the physical body seems also to enjoy consciousness, to enjoy awareness, to enjoy being known. These are all, I'm just trying to use words that we use. Just think about it. All of these things are instrumental to allowing objects to be known. That's what it is. And so what allows the world to be known in the form of color is my eyes. And so the eyes are then carriers of consciousness in reference to all of the color that I perceive. The mind is the carrier of consciousness, really, for everything that the sense organs perceive. Does everybody see that? It's like without my eyes, I couldn't see color. But the eyes need to have the backing of the mind in order, really, for that perception to be there. But the eyes are responsible for the cognition of color. The ears are responsible for the cognition of sound. However, if the mind wasn't there, if the mind was off daydreaming, even though these physical sense organs are there available, if the mind isn't present, right, the cognition really isn't taking place. So you need the mind there, but then that mind utilizes these sense organs in order for these perceptions to take place. And the perceptions that are taking place are all known. They're all known to me. What that means, the other word we can use is, they are all in awareness. And so in the meditation, when you were kind of sitting quietly, what I was trying to point out there is that just as you let yourself be aware of all of the cognitions, be aware of the physical body, be aware of the breath, be aware of the changing thoughts in the mind, whatever moods and emotions are there, and be aware of yourself. And notice that there is nothing behind you aware of you. There's nothing behind illumining you. That's where I said awareness stops at awareness. There's not an awareness behind the awareness illumining the awareness. So that's why we say this awareness is swaprakashatvam. But it is this awareness that the mind enjoys. Okay. Without this awareness, the mind is inert. Right? The awareness that the mind enjoys allows the mind to be known. And therefore, we say that for the mind to have the experience of being known is caused by the awareness. So we say that the awareness is the mind of the mind. What causes the sense organs to be able to see color, for instance? What allows color to be known? Right? Awareness, because of the is-knownness. And so therefore, the awareness is the eye of the eye. It's the ear of the ear, meaning it's the very consciousness which illumines all of these perceptions. Right? However, this awareness that I am, that illumines all of these perceptions, all of my sense organs and the physical body and all the cognitions in the mind, is not illumined by them. Right? The consciousness, awareness illumines the mind, but the mind can't turn around and illumine consciousness. Right? Because the mind isn't consciousness. Right? The mind is illumined by consciousness. The mind, in fact, is just thought flow. It's one vritti, one thought modification after another thought modification, another thought modification, that all come and go in awareness. Just think about it. This vritti means thought modification. So the mind is one, you know, chain thinking, associative thinking, one thought after another. If he's going to sit in meditation, you can just relax and watch the thought flow. Okay? And if you're relaxed enough to have a little distance on your mind instead of being, you know, kind of sucked into it and totally identified with it, you just relax for a minute. Whether you're in meditation or just walking along, you can see that the mind is chattering away. And chatter, chatter, chatter. You simply are there as the observer, as the conscious being that illumines that chatter. Okay, so now, if you were to sit quietly for a minute just to allow yourself to appreciate the nature of your cognitions, whether they be the intellect, whether they be the buddhi, intellect, or just the fluctuating mind, whether they be memories, whether it be even the I thought, oh look, I'm watching my mind. That's a thought. Right? All of these are thoughts. And they all come and they go, and they come and they go, and they come and they go. They have no being of their own. They're ephemeral. The being which these thoughts enjoy is me, is the conscious being that's not coming and going at all. Right? It's a sangha, the conscious being, the awareness, the atma, which is a sangha, means it's simply the very being, the very substance, the very consciousness, changeless consciousness, that all of these thoughts enjoy. So these thoughts, which themselves have no substance of their own, because they simply come and go, come and go, and come and go, they are themselves not consciousness. They're not away from consciousness. You can say, if you want to say they themselves are consciousness, that's fine. That means they have no substance apart from the consciousness which you are. Right? But they don't have a separate consciousness. If you want to say they themselves are consciousness, all right. But then you're saying it like, if you mean it like this, the clay pot. The pot is the clay. If you mean like that, fine. The pot is the clay. It means the pot form. It has no substance, no being at all apart from consciousness. Though you can say that. But the problem is the pot form, I can smash it into a plate and the pot isn't there anymore. And so even though the pot really is nothing but consciousness, clay, right? It really is nothing but clay. It itself really isn't, right? It doesn't have any being apart from clay for it to be a contender. So it's not that there's clay and clay pot. It's not clay and pot, or clay illumining the pot and pot illumining back the clay. And there's no pot illumining back the clay. So here there's awareness, your being, which the mind is enjoys, and you can say, really, there is nothing but consciousness there. But you can't then turn around and say that if you want to say that, fine, but you can't turn around and say, and this mind, which enjoys consciousness, is aware of the consciousness, as though it's a consciousness aware of this consciousness, and let's have a relationship. Hello? Hello. No. There's no relationship there. This is so important because what it means is that the consciousness experience, the knownness of consciousness, the awareness of consciousness, belongs to itself. There's nobody giving it that experience. The mind isn't contributing to that experience. It is the experience which the mind enjoys. Like, and it's not that the mind enjoys it as though the mind is looking at it. The mind enjoys it in this way. The mind says, I am a conscious being. But what is happening there is that the mind is taking the consciousness which illumines it and identifying it with its changing self. So that the mind can then say, I am happy consciousness, I am sad consciousness, I am agitated consciousness, I am perceptual consciousness, I am, you know, auditory consciousness. It takes the consciousness to belong to whatever changing modification it goes through, where that is not the experience. The experience is consciousness is stable. I mean, your own experience. Consciousness is the stable one, is the asanga, is the non-attached being that illumines every thought that comes and goes. And every thought that comes and goes, because that differentiation hasn't been made, every thought that comes and goes, the ahankara will say, I am that, I am that, I am that, I am that, I am that. Where that ahankara, the I notion, is owning the consciousness as me and then identifying it with the changing thought flow. So here, what has to be seen is that in fact, the consciousness which the mind enjoys is the mind of the mind. It is the consciousness that illumines the mind. It is the consciousness that illumines the sense organs. It is the very being, the very consciousness that the mind enjoys. The very being, the consciousness that the sense organs enjoy. The mind and the sense organs aren't away from me. They're not away from my being. But then if you ask, can the mind and the sense organs, which enjoy me and for their very being, turn around and look at me? Well, no. Your eyes are only capable of seeing form. That's what they do. They're limited. The sense organs have what we call epistemological limits. They have their own sphere of knowledge. The sphere of knowledge for your eyes is color, form. For your ears is sound. For your sense organs, right? Whatever the sense organ is, that's its sphere. Touch is touch, etc. And what about the mind? What is its sphere? Well, its sphere for the mind is whatever vritti, whatever thought modification happens to be there, whether it be perceptual or whether it be one of the four basic cognitions that it can enjoy, like memory or the ahankara, the I notion, or the buddhi, the intellect, or the manas, whatever, or fantasy, whatever cognition is there, right, that is what is being illumined, right? Now, can it have a cognition of the self which is other than itself? It's a very interesting thing to understand. Little tricky. The self illumines the mind, is the mind of the mind, is the consciousness which lights up the cognition. Okay? Now, say, in, for instance, a nirvikalpa samadhi or a savikalpa samadhi, we might as well get into this. Let me explain what I mean by that. Say we want to know, can the mind illumine the self? Can the mind illumine the self? Can it become the luminary, the knower of the self? Well, the closest we can come to that illusion is what we will call savikalpa samadhi, which can move into nirvikalpa samadhi. Or in other words, we have akhandakara vritti. What happens there is, for instance, when we meditate and we pull the mind back away from all sense perception. You know, like for instance, you shut your eyes and you relax your body. Just think about what we do in meditation. Shut your eyes, you relax your body so that even the contours of the body are not really visible because the body is so relaxed. The more relaxed your body is, when your eyes are shut, it basically disappears because there's no tension in it for you to even notice the difference between it and the space. That's a relaxed body. And then say you do some breathing exercise in order to quieten the mind. So you do japa, some repetition of a mantra, and some breathing exercises to quieten the mind. And then the mind becomes very, very still. And then in Nididhyasana, the meditation that we use, we direct the mind toward awareness. So that in this condition, the vritti, the thought modification, has no other content other than awareness. Right? So normally, the mind, right, is seeing this or seeing that or seeing this. It's thinking or it's perceiving or it's feeling or it's daydreaming. It usually is filled with all kinds of content that is illumined by awareness. And so now what we do is we bring the mind in, right? We bring the mind into quietude and then turn it toward awareness. Right? And so now you have the awareness itself illumining a mind that is doing what? That mind has more or less become invisible because its content is only the awareness. It's like the pot. We tell, okay, pot, we want you now to relax and meditate on the clay. Right? The pot now. So it relaxes and it meditates on the clay. Is the pot responsible now for the clay experience? The pot is meditating on the clay. Is the pot now becoming a knower of the clay? And I would say, there is never a time that the pot has not been the clay to now become a knower of the clay, as though there's a pot, a clay outside of the clay to illumine the clay. All that's happening is that the pot is, in a sense, getting out of the way. So now here, when the mind becomes quiet, it simply is not contributing anything to confuse the issue. Because normally, awareness is superimposed on whatever thought modification happens to be there. And so the mind then says, I am such and such, I am such and such. I am happy, I am sad, I am seeing, I am thinking, I am doing whatever. When the mind becomes quiet and is focused on awareness, then there's nobody there saying, I am this and I am that and I am this and I am that. And so awareness is given the opportunity by the mind to shine just of its own accord so that the mind no longer at that moment is confusing the issue. However, the mind is not contributing to the experience of awareness. And it never has. Nor is that the experience. In fact, for Jnani, one who once you've recognized your being, and this is something that Ramana so beautifully said, it doesn't matter if I'm walking or talking or thinking or seeing. It doesn't make any difference. I can sit in samadhi like this, or I can have my eyes open. It makes no difference to my being at all. Not in the slightest. Right? So in fact, there is absolutely no contribution to the awareness or to the knownness from the mind, because the knownness that the mind enjoys is only the self. Right? It doesn't have any knownness of its own. And so in terms of the mind being able to know awareness or contribute to awareness, that's not possible. But what is possible in terms of gaining self-knowledge? Let me just make sure that that's clear. I think it's very obvious for you that these sense organs are not capable of knowing the Atma as an object because they have such definite spheres. The question is, can the mind know the object, the Atma, as an object? The answer again is no, because The Atma is not an object to be objectified. It will always be the subject. However, the self-ignorance that the mind is enjoying in reference to the Atma can be removed. So the mind can recognize that the nature of the Swarupa, the very nature of the self that illumines it, is free from it. That my being, the conscious being that the mind enjoys and that has always said, I am that conscious being, it can recognize that the conscious being that I am is free, is a Sangha, is free from it. It recognizes that without creating any distance, there is no distance between the knownness of the mind, right, and the mind. Right? Every vritti is completely known. Every vritti enjoys awareness. But the awareness doesn't change. That's why mind of the mind, the awareness that allows the mind to be known, doesn't change. The mind changes. And so the mind is very capable of recognizing itself as a changing entity that is objectifiable. Objectifiable means I can sit there and watch it come and go. It's objectified. And it's very capable of recognizing that the awareness that illumines it is not changing. And so the mind, just like the mind, the ahankara, can say, I am this body. I am a conscious being. I am happy. I am sad. Right? It's what it's doing because of ignorance is relating myself to these states of experience. Because that's how it sees it. But it can also say, once it gains knowledge, it can say, oh, a sanggoham. I, referring to me, the Atma, could say, I, the self, doesn't change at all. While I, the mind, is changing. While the mind is changing, the Atma, the self, me, doesn't ever change. In fact, no matter what my thoughts are, I don't change. Now it's talking, now when it says that, it's relating the I to the Brahman, to the self, where the I belongs. Right? Now the I becomes properly placed. When you say, I am, you say those words, I am, where does that I land? Where does the ahankara, where does it land? Does it land in the conscious being, in the Atma? Does it land on you, the changeless you? Or does it still land on the changing mind that I have identified as being conscious? Does it land on me, the conscious, changeless self? Or does it still take the conscious being, me, to be one with the changing mind? That's what we call the superimposition, the mutual superimposition caused by ignorance. That differentiation isn't there. And so I need to be able to recognize myself as the consciousness because of which all of this is known, and that consciousness being the one whom all of these things cannot know. In other words, they can't be objectified by me. I can't be objectified by them. And he says, so manas chakshura dehi agamya swarupa, I can't be known by them, then how can I be known? The next verse will deal with that, but this last line deals with it. When it says, aham atma, this atma is nitya upalabdhi swarupaha. My very swarupa is consciousness. That's how I am known, because I'm self-effulgent, not because there's a subject-object relationship, not because something is knowing me. I'm the bottom line. You know, consciousness stops at consciousness. There's not a consciousness behind me, illumining me. That's why, really, when you sit, at any time, but it's nice just to slow things down and sit for a moment. When you sit quietly, or at any moment, there is nothing away from consciousness. From your core, you can't get behind it. There's nothing behind consciousness. There's nothing away from consciousness in your experience. And there's nothing knowing consciousness. It's not like there's a consciousness illumining consciousness. Look at this type of, impossibility. What is not conscious can't illumine consciousness. The inert, because it's inert, right, can't illumine or know consciousness. Only consciousness can know consciousness. But what is the, you see that? Something, do you understand? Something which is inert, if by the very definition that it is inert, it cannot be a knower of anything because it's inert, insentient. So the only thing that can know consciousness, the only thing that can know anything is consciousness. Right? And so now, so we say, well, okay, consciousness can know consciousness. Well, exactly. But consciousness can't know consciousness as a subject-object relationship, because what is the subject and what is the object? The only thing that's going to be between the two is something inert, which doesn't know anything. And so consciousness knows consciousness not because it illumines consciousness as something other than itself, but because it is consciousness. That's what we mean by svatta siddha. It is self-evident. Consciousness, your being, is self-evident. There's nothing illumining it. It's svaprakashatvam. It's self-luminous. Right? Nothing illumining it. It is its own light. So now, when you just sit quietly in contemplation, is there anything in your experience that is not lit? The totality of your experience at all times is one of consciousness. Because everything that you experience is in consciousness. Like, for instance, I can say, well, that painting's not in consciousness. Well, yes, it is. Because it's in my awareness. How do I even know it? Right? If I look at the moon is in consciousness. Why? Because it's known. Right? So there is no experience, just for you as an individual I'm talking, for you as an individual, there is no experience away from consciousness. What to speak of your own being? Oh, everything's in consciousness except for me. Everything's in consciousness except for my being. Well, in fact, the only thing that is the consciousness is your being. Right? Because if it weren't your being, you wouldn't know about it. If your being is insentient, it's insentient and nobody knows about it. Right? So it's a beautiful thing just to sit and recognize that there is nothing apart from consciousness, and you are that consciousness. You're not going to be the things and the experiences that leave. You're the one experience that stays. That's what we call the anuvritti, the thing that is always, always there, that gets the label of I'm the body, I'm the mind, I'm the sin. It gets these limited labels. That's true. But that doesn't mean that the consciousness, which is inappropriately being mislabeled, is limited. That which is changeless and non-objectifiable as an object is not limited. Its fact is limitless. Right? And everything else that we say is limited all right, because everything that you experience is infinitely divisible, so in that way it's limited, and the right side is different from the left side, etc. But actually, when you start analyzing all of these experiences, none of them really have any substance at all away from consciousness. But we'll see that tomorrow. Let's stop here. Let's take a minute. Oh my gosh. We'll just take just a couple of minutes just to notice the fact of it, that there but there is nothing away from consciousness. And just let yourself just relax into the center of that, your being, that which is most personal to you, your own sense of self. home. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Initially discriminates that, you know, whether the mind is happy or sad, it discriminates the changing from the unchanging. But that recognition by itself, is it capable of relaxing the mind, or is it really then the mind has to learn that, it's that. That, you know, that the source of its own happiness is not in the objects. I mean, does it have to learn that additionally in order to relax and then also know the order of the world, the universe, where the mind and the body's place is in it and all of that? So is the discrimination itself, because the discrimination just seems to say, okay, well, yes, the self is always unchanging, but the mind, the whole reason we are here is because of the mind, and the mind is the compelling force that keeps it going. So in order for the mind to be happy and for the mind to relax, it seems like the discrimination by itself.
There's more to it.
Yeah.
Maybe one way to understand is that when we define the Atma, one definition for the Atma is Sat Chit Ananda. We need to recognize that I am all three of those things. The Sat is that my existence, my being, is nitya, is timeless. And so when I differentiate myself, because there's nothing more dear to me than me, I don't want to die tomorrow, right? Or even today, later, right? And so your being, a problem that a human being suffers from is one, my own finitude. That what is actually my nature is actually free from time, is changeless. And yet I take myself to be time bound. But now, if the Sat, you know, this existence, if this existence were miserable by nature, then that wouldn't be a very happy situation. We don't want to realize that we are going to be infinitely sorrowful, right? Infinite sorrow. Satchit dukkha. We don't want that. We don't want satchit dukkha. Okay? So we want to recognize that this being that I am, the existent being that I am, is free from time. And that this being is chit, this consciousness, in fact, means that the very swarupa, the very nature of my being, is consciousness or knowledge. In other words, the accumulation of knowledge that I seek, let me know this, let me know that, let me know this, let me know this, the knownness exact of what I'm accumulating is in fact limitless, and that knownness is my own swarupa. I collect objects, and it is known, it is known, it is known, and maybe if I collect enough of them, I'll finally feel like I know something. Right? But in fact, one thing's a little aside here. Swamiji's often told the humorous truth that the more knowledge you have, the more knowledge you collect, the more ignorant you feel. And the example that we use for that is like if you have a little pen light, you know, a little laser pen light, it doesn't have too much of a diameter circumference, you know, of darkness that it's aware of. Because it's just a little skinny pen light. But if you have a big beam, then the darkness, the ignorance that it's illuminating, is much larger. So the more you know, the more you don't know. Right? And so it's kind of a folly, since it doesn't resolve into I know, into knownness. But in fact, chit, the consciousness, is that infinite knownness which we're seeking. So that's resolved with a sat-chit. We have to understand my being as sat-chit and as ananda. That this being, the me, this self, is the source of ananda that is ever at any time enjoyed by the mind. It is its own swarupananda, its own fullness, in and of its own self. But whenever the mind is quiet, as it is, whenever you fulfill a desire, this is the great hoax, Bhagavan's trick. Whenever the mind is quiet, at that moment, it's desireless. Right? Whenever it fulfills a desire, whenever the mind fulfills a desire, at that moment, it's desireless, and so therefore, quiet. It's quiet, it's like a still water bucket reflecting the sun. And so then it has an experience of happiness. So really all you need is a relaxed mind for the mind to feel happy. You don't need an object. It's just that we use these objects to put the mind into a desireless state, not knowing that that's what's going on. For jnani, they don't have this circuitous route. I want that because if I get that, that will make me happy. So you get that, and so for the moment your mind says, oh, good, I've got that, so now I can be happy. So the mind's relaxed. So it experiences some happiness. Jnani, when it has self-knowledge, doesn't go through this route in order to have a desireless mind, because it knows that the source of the ananda that the mind enjoys is my own being. So there's two things there. The being that already is by its own swarupa nature, by its own nature, the beloved, because everything you do for yourself, right? And so it the mind recognizes and differentiates the very nature of the I and recognizes the profound dearness of this I. And it recognizes that its own experience of ananda is only that relaxation, which we say reflects that I. That relaxation comes and goes, and so the experiences of the mind come and go. Relaxed mind reflects the self, agitated mind doesn't. But for the jnani, that is not the end all. The state of minds are not the end all. Right? My own swarupa is. And so what you were saying is that, all right, say this differentiation between the mind is complete. Right? Do I still need to recognize, does the mind still need to recognize that this me is the source of ananda? It depends. That needs to be taught, definitely. But when that differentiation is complete, means that you've recognized your own nature, what you recognize also is the dearness of your nature. When you recognize the me, you are not just kind of a dry, existent space like that. Consciousness, your being, is dear. It's not bliss that comes and goes. It's not a bliss experience. It's not a happy experience. It's not happiness that comes, and it's not gradiated happiness. It's not gradiated bliss. It's not gradiated love. It's something better than all of that. It's something more dear than all of that, and that is your own swarupa, your own being. And so once the differentiation from the mind is clear, then we like your mind to spend time getting to be with and recognizing that differentiated one. And that is tremendous ananda, but that ananda is different than the bliss in the mind. I would say, really, for the mind to come to complete rest and be able to say, ah, okay, all is well with me. It needs to know all of these things. Yeah. But if that differentiation is complete, the swarupananda is recognized. which is different from the vritti ananda. Okay. Everybody get that? Try not to use too much Sanskrit. Vritti means thought. Vritti ananda means the ananda, the bliss that's in the thought. And so if your thoughts change, and so you can have a really blissful thought, a happy thought, or a sad thought, depending upon the condition of the mind. The Atma isn't sometimes happy and sometimes sad. It's always exactly the same. And that nature, which is always the same, is its own ananda. It's just a different meaning of the word ananda than these changing bliss experiences in the mind. Right? If it comes and goes, that's not it. Anything that comes and goes, any bliss or any state of experience that comes and goes, that's not the self.
I have a Sanskrit question. Ananda Mai, is that the person who gets his or her happiness through Maya?
No. It's Ananda Maya. There, when that Maya is being used, it means consists of. That which is composed of consists only of Ananda. Mm. It's a different type of affix. Yeah. Made of or consists of. It's different than Maya. Maya. Yeah. An affix.
Okay, well, either Ananda or the recognition of the self as subject and then, you know, all of these imply a cognition of the mind.
Because do you know, the problem is this. The mind is the one that's suffering.
Right.
The mind is the one that gets tense, that is afraid it's going to die. The mind has got the problem, right?
And so
the mind has to recognize what it is and what the Atma is. But the Atma that it is recognizing is the self that illumines it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is talking about, right? The mind can talk about anything. So now it's talking about the self-luminous me that is changeless. The mind's not, the self's not speaking, the mind is speaking about the self.
Right, but I mean that even when we talk of Svarupananda, we say Svarupananda only belongs to the self.
Yeah, right.
Well, right. It only belongs to the self, but the Svarupananda is a cognition of the mind.
No, that's not quite right.
When we say, I know what you mean, but I mean that when we say Svarupananda,
mm-hmm.
when we use that term, you know, it implies a recognition.
That's true. You're
in the mind.
No, almost. Well, maybe you're saying it right. Let me say it, and then you say if you're saying it right. The Svarupananda, that means the ananda that is the very nature, changeless nature of the Atma. That's what we mean by that. The mind recognizes that that is the nature of the Atma, and then that is changeless. It recognizes that no matter what it thinks, what moods it has, what perceptions it has, that the Svarupananda is always present to that mind. And so now it has differentiated the changeless Svarupananda from whatever vritti is there, and recognizes that the Svarupananda is never ever away. If the vritti in the mind is miserable, that ahankara can come and say, the knowledge vritti can come and say, oh look, the mind is miserable, but I am Svarupananda. It recognizes both.
But the Svarupananda, you know, it just, maybe because it's an attribute, maybe because it...
It's not an attribute. Svarupa means its own nature. The nature of, what Sepi say, the Atma, is Sat, Chit, Ananda. Ananda is not an attribute. Existence, the being of the self, existence is a little bit abstract. So let's use being, your being. Your being is consciousness. Consciousness and being are one and the same. Being and doesn't have an attribute of consciousness. Consciousness is being. Being is consciousness. They're one and the same thing. Two words that are pointing to the same thing. And that being, which is consciousness, is ananda. It's not there's some other ananda. The nature of being is ananda. It's not a quality. Actually, ananda really means the limitlessness. The ananda, which we think of in terms of the mind as bliss, fullness, wholeness. These are love. These are different words we can use for ananda. When we apply that ananda to the nature of the self, we're referring to its limitlessness. But that limitlessness is, we call it ananda for a reason, because of the self-experience.
I guess what I'm trying to say, sorry, I'm not doing a very good job of asking my question, but what I'm trying to say is that for the mind to recognize anything about the self, that recognition in itself is a cognition in the mind. That recognition is a mental activity.
All right, but what it's recognizing is changeless and is the very source that illumines the cognition. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
It's having a cognition about that which illumines it. It's having a cognition about what is its own being, the changelessness of its own being.
Right, but that seems different from saying the self is its own experience. You know what I mean?
No, it's not different. That's the big thing to be recognized. That's why, in fact, we say that for atma-jnanam, for knowledge of the self, it is really ajnana-nivritti, the removal, nivritti of ignorance. Because there is no gain of an experience. There's the removal of the ignorance that caused the mind to superimpose the self on itself and superimpose itself on the self. It's what we call anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition. That's the mistake of the mind. And that mistake has to be rectified by removing the ignorance. But there is not a gain of an object. Like, for instance, in everything else, except for self-knowledge, when I gain knowledge, my mind needs to use a, say, for instance, sense organ in order to gain an experience of something that wasn't there before. Right? And then awareness illumines that cognition, and we can say that is now known. Okay? This isn't like that. Awareness is already there. The experience is already there. And so the vritti can't come in and bring in some new information, like a new object of knowledge. There is no new object of knowledge. And so therefore, there's just the removal of the ignorance that caused the mind to take itself to be the sentient one. There's a whole beautiful study, we'll do it sometime, vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti. But the vritti-vyapti is the pervasiveness of the vritti to the object. Like, if through my sense organs, my mind gains a vritti, it pervades the painting. Right? So now the vritti, the painting pervades the vritti. Right? That's vritti-vyapti, pervading the vritti, the thought modification. The pala-vyapti is another vritti that then comes and says, yes, this is a painting. That's then objectified. Here, if the mind pervades the self, right? In other words, like in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, there's not going to be any pala-vyapti. There's nobody that's going to come and say, oh, look, you know? Because the subject now is the object, in a sense. There's no subject-object duality there. What's your name?
Chris.
Chris, yeah.
Christian. Okay, my confusion comes with, like, the nature, and I don't mean to go too out there, but the experience of, like, say, psychic phenomena. You're capable of reading someone else's mind and understand the capacity of saying, my mind is now sensing this mind and identifying with it, and therefore I can read it.
Mm-hmm.
I can cope with that. I can get that.
Mm-hmm.
But then is the knowing really going, is it the ultimate self using the mind to perceive the other mind, or is it going, I don't understand the directionality of it.
Yeah, actually, from the standpoint of the self, just consciousness, there is no knowership. There's just consciousness, being. The knowership belongs to the mind. In fact, like, for instance, if you have eyes, and so you call yourself a seer. If you lost your eyes, there's no seer. There's just consciousness there with eyes that don't work. So there's no seer. if you didn't have a mind, and remember, a sangha, consciousness is not connected, right? And so say, not connected in the sense of it changing when the mind changes. Therefore, knowership itself doesn't belong to the mind. I mean, knowership doesn't belong to the consciousness. The mind is required for this subject-object type relationship. So that means now, here in this infinite creation, you are an individual with a mind. And in this creation, infinite creation, we say is Ishvara, is like an infinite mind, which we call Ishvara of God. Within this infinite mind, here you are with your limited mind, and here so-and-so with their limited mind. But the laws are such, on a subtle level, that such things as being able to mind read and these type of things for people that work for siddhis, these type of things, can accomplish that type of thing. Also, we can do astral travel. There's all kinds of siddhis that are available for a human being if they want to work for that, right, within the network of the whole creation. But still, you are working from the standpoint of the jiva, from the standpoint of the individual, the body, the mind, sense organs, are working the laws of the creation in order to have some of these extrasensory perceptions and powers and whatnot, because that's what you're interested in. Another person might be interested in swimming or bike riding, you know, or becoming a pianist. You happen to be interested in mind reading or in astral travel or in whatever. It's all of it. All of it is still within samsara. All of it is still within time, within all the multidimensional nature of the creation. But the Atma, the self, is not one of these objects within the creation. The Atma, your being, is actually the substrate reality of the whole thing, which I didn't really talk about tonight, but just because wasn't the point of that verse. But yourself isn't participating in these type of activities. The mind is participating in that. And the mind can participate on a subtle level.
So it's the mind perceiving the consciousness on a physical level. Then, in that sense, it's like, because it's not the mind knowing the knower.
No,
it's
the mind is
perceiving.
Well, the mind is considered subtle. The physical body is considered gross, or what we call stula sharira. The mind is subtle, right? And so the mind, say through whatever laws, I don't mind read myself, but I know such things, you know. So say the mind is capable of mind reading or whatever, these clairvoyance or whatever, right? So this limited mind, using the laws that are available in the creation, has the capacity, what we call a siddhi, to know somebody else's mind or see into the future. It's using laws within the creation. So the Atma, the self, is not the mind, right?
Sorry to get this out for you guys. I guess my question comes down to what level of the self, like, is the experience of, let's say philosophy, is that knowing the individualized self, or is it knowing through the non-individualized self? See what I'm saying? Like, are we...
It's knowing through the individualized self, but the consciousness that the individualized self is using, because this mind enjoys consciousness, that consciousness is really one, the same in all beings. But the individualized, the mind, right, which is reflects that consciousness, your mind, is different from my mind. So your mind reflecting the one consciousness is different from my mind reflecting the one consciousness. The consciousness level, there's only one. Right? But your mind is using telepathy to know what my mind is thinking. But the consciousness that illumines your mind is the same consciousness that illumines my mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. No. From the standpoint of just consciousness, right, there's no cognition, there's just pure being, consciousness. If I were to take all the mind away and take the whole universe away, the knownness that the universe enjoys would be exactly the same, but there would be no objects there. From the standpoint now of Ishvara, say the jiva, because of jiva mukta liberated, you're the jiva, body, mind, sense organs are not there. They're gone, because there's nothing to keep that jiva going once self-knowledge is there. And so when the body drops, then there's no for you. The mind is gone. Sense organs are gone. So then you'll think, you mean no creation? But what is there is whatever Ishvara is, who you are. That's why I use the example of when I like the dream example. Sometimes when you're dreaming, you are identified with the body in the dream, right? And doing things within the dream. You're experiencing the dream from within, right? Sometimes you're not identified with the body in the dream, with an individual in the dream, and then you're just the whole. And that's your reality. You don't say when you go from the individual to the whole that one is more comfortable to you than another, yet that you are the whole anyway. Right? So when you're dreaming as the whole without identification with the body, that's fine. That's who you are. So in reality, you are Ishvara. But from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, this body, mind, sense organs is only capable of perceiving. The limited mind reflects awareness, the limited sense organs reflect awareness, the limited body reflects awareness, and that's what this upadhi, this conditioning adjunct, is capable of doing. When this adjunct is no more, then it's just the Ishvara, which is who you are. So if I don't even say you are Brahman, because Brahman is the reality. Brahman, Atma means the infinite self. You are Brahman. But really, then you say, well, what about Ishvara? No, you are Ishvara, right? Because there is no Ishvara away from Brahman. Brahman is Ishvara, in the sense that the truth of Ishvara is Brahman. Does that get to what you're asking? The word cognition just means a thought modification. That's all it means.
Okay.
Yeah. Through, usually when you use the word, it means a cognition is something that takes place, a thought modification that takes place through your sense organs is usually through a means of knowledge. But really, it's just another vritti, yeah, another thought modification.
So, right, in a way, we're already doing that when we objectify the mind, we objectify the body and the senses. In a way, we are dying in that sense, but out of body.
In a way, we are. Well, you can recognize the freedom of your own being.
Mm.
Yeah, and that self, right, that's differentiated, will never change ever at any time. The whole universe can go away and you're still there. That's what we mean by asanga. You know, and timeless, not objectifiable, not.
So could you say that gives you a foretaste of what happens after the body sheds?
Yeah, like even if you look, yeah, nothing happens. Just like an example that we like to use again is the dream. Just how when you go from waking to dream, to deep sleep to waking, there's no death experience. Don't you think that's weird? Really, if you look at it, you know, you have a dream. And you're totally involved in the dream. You've got a character. You're identified with a character in a dream. The whole elaborate stuff is going on. And then the alarm goes off and the dream is gone. And here you are. No death experience at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you had been identified with a body in the dream. You were identified. That was you. Right? And it's gone. But there is zero death experience. That's what death is like.
Well, it's the same in deep sleep, right? Because you don't recognize you. If someone would call your name, right, in deep sleep, you don't recognize. There's no identification, right?
Yeah.
So that's like death, too, though, in a way.
In a way, in the sense that it's like death in the sense that there is no such thing. There is no such thing as death. And that's why you can, you can use these. We call something death, but there is no such experience.
It's a notion, huh?
It's a notion. It's a total. It's a complete notion. It doesn't exist. There is change of experience. Pretty substantial change of experience. But there's no change in your being, in you. You don't change. Your field of experience will change. You know, but really interestingly, if you think like this, the jiva is a transmigrating entity now, a soul, a transmigrating soul, has been doing this for a long time, beginningless time. So for the standpoint of the jiva, it's not a new experience, but when the jiva is associated with this physical body and you think, you know, what's that going to be like? When the jiva, when this physical body drops, what's going to happen to me? Yeah. But I think from the standpoint of the jiva, at least what they say in the tradition, there's much longer lifespan. You know, instead of just this life, then you say, oh, I was like this, and then I had this birth, and this birth, and this birth. Don't ask me anymore. That's all I know. It's a total about that. But what I'm saying is that there's more of a kind of a memory until you take another physical body in the whole scheme of reincarnation. But none of that has to do with the Atma. Your Atma's not reincarnated. It's always the same.
I didn't really understand what you were just talking about.
Yeah, never mind. It was totally not worth repeating. Yeah, never mind. It's not worth it.
Okay.
But what were you going to ask?
Well, were you talking about like a personalized identity that is differentiated with differentiated from the one that identifies with a particular body, but it's not the
you know what?
Whole Atman?
No. The personalized identity you realize is changeless Brahman. So when you say you, I am, you think you're this body, but in fact, when this body drops, nothing will have happened to you. However, when this body drops, there's still a soul that we call the jiva that transmigrates, take birth after birth after birth. That is also limited. It limited sense organs, limited mind, limited karmas, different karmas from you, etc. like that. And so that soul goes on transmigrating, but the self of that soul is Atma. And that's not Atma, the self is not transmigrating. It's always the steady, always the same.
So like if you have an out-of-body experience and you're perceiving yourself
over the body,
that's something. The jiva?
That's the jiva, yeah. Got it.
That works.
Yeah, that works good. That's good.